On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Bruce McAvaney blew me away on Saturday morning when he said that he believes that Winx is the best horse that has ever raced in Australia, and he has her as number one.
I agree.
Can't remember who tweeted this on my timeline today, but they pointed out US Navy flag, worst tour of Australia since England in the 2006-07 Ashes.
I wanted to have to claw her way to do it.
Do you think there would be a better chance of the Autumn Sun running the Cox Plate if he was trained by a different trainer?
Oh, there'd probably be more serious thought of it, for sure. He could start this Saturday and not beat her the following Saturday in the Cox Plate.
Lloyd's quote was about, you got four runners and what's your threat? And he said, taking on Darren Weir these days is like taking on the West Coast Eagles and they've got 22 on the field instead of 18.
It is The Verdict, and as we do each and every Monday, we discuss and dissect the week's issues and the weekend's racing. And while it's not the Spring Carnival, what a weekend. We had some amazing performances up north. A very nice win by Sky Boy in the Villiers for Team Cummings. And we'll also discuss the Inner Dominion, because Gareth Hall, who is one of the main men when it comes to racing and harness over in Perth from Tap Radio, is here in Melbourne. He's a Victorian, and he was at the Inner Dominion, as we were on Saturday night. Matty Stewart, great to see you.
How are you, Mickey? We were there indeed, yes.
So we'll discuss the Inner Dominion a little later in the back half, and David Gately is joining us on The Verdict today. But the Gator likes to run everywhere, and I think he's still running.
He's a swooper.
He will be here.
He's a late swooper.
We are told he
Male
is not...
he's somewhere between the car park and the studio.
Not far away. A lot going on in the world of racing over the weekend, not just on the track but off it. And today is going to be a very interesting day. And you will be there, Matty, because the Aquanita Appeal continues at VCAT. And today we are expecting the Nelligans.
Greg and Denise Nelligan. And they were the... Now, the Nelligans, of course, have been disqualified for life, along with Robert Smurden, for their role in this greatest scandal in Australian racing history, which I think it's accurately described as. And obviously, the contents of Greg Nelligan's phone, the thousands of text messages that revealed a systemic cheating regime with Aquanita that went back 10 years, that was all revealed via the text messages and implicated a handful of people. And they are going to front up today. And it's going to be interesting, because I've always been curious about this circle of knowledge that Jeff Gleeson described, just a nice term to describe who knew what about what, and that's the term he conjured up during the RAB board hearing some time ago. And whether or not the subpoenaed appearance of the Nelligans and Danny Garland and others will shed any more light on this circle of knowledge, and whether the circle gets wider.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how forthcoming they are when they are cross-examined today, because it was Denise Nelligan who initially blew the whistle on the whole, doping scandal, when all of the text messages were found. And it's her husband, Greg Nelligan, who was one of the pivotal people involved in organising the top-ups, as they were called.
And they're out for life. Who knows? They may want to have a talk. They may want to talk about it, you know, and they're under oath. And so I just think there may be an interesting twist today, depending on what the Nelligans say. And Danny Garland, when he appeared on Friday, he wasn't saying much.
The moth
was...
He forgot a lot of things.
He didn't bring a lot to the table, the moth.
No.
No, he didn't know what was going on, the moth. And so maybe the Nelligans will be a little bit more forthcoming than the moth. But
Well, we'll have more on that tomorrow, but it could be a very interesting day.
I'm going to be down there, hopefully, you know, about 10:15. It starts at 10 at VCAT, and I'll have something on the website later on to sum up today's interesting, I'm sure will be interesting, developments.
Before I get our teeth into Flemington, also want to talk about the racing in Queensland and also in Sydney as well. What about Zach Purton last night over in Hong Kong? 5 winners, 900 career winners now in Hong Kong, and he's 12 clear in this season's premiership.
Just incredible, especially when you go to the starting point. And my starting point with Zach Purton is a chat I had with Robert Smurden quite some time ago, and then refreshed that chat after Zach Purton won the Caulfield Cup on Admira Rackley in 2014. And Robert Smurden had Zach Purton as on a 3-month loan from Queensland when Zach Purton was an apprentice years and years ago. He's 35 years old now. And Smurden said it was a very unusual time. He said he was addicted to his doona. He had an issue with the cold weather. He was arrogant. He was lazy. He was a brilliant rider. He could see that, but he was immature and he was all sorts of negative things. But Smurden always said, look, if he ever gets his act together, this kid, he will be an absolute megastar. And that's what he's become. He's an amazing story, Zach Purton. And he's never going to chase down Dougie White because Dougie White's just too far ahead. But he's got Tony Cruz in his sights. And when you look at the global jockey ranks, Joe Moreira, for whatever reason, sort of faded off the pace a bit in the last 12 months. The Japanese, well, the Japanese thing didn't quite work out because he failed the
and
test.
He's gone back.
He didn't know Mount Fuji.
What?
It's a local knowledge test. You had to sort of prove that you knew enough a bit about Japan. I'm not sure about the Mount Fuji bit. Hugh Bowman's there. Ryan Moore is there. Zach Purton's there. And one or two others. Oisin Murphy is the other one. So it's just interesting where he came from to where he is now. And the biggest story, though, I reckon, is simmering along is a couple of key things that are going to happen this week, re the Autumn Sun and Winx. Chris Waller spoke to John Massara, who's now a part owner of the Autumn Sun. There will be a press release issued by Chris Waller in the next day or so to outline the campaign for the Autumn Sun. And there's a meeting of the owners of Winx on Thursday to determine her path. You know, it may be retirement. What they're going to do is they're going to gather key track riders, the Spelling Farm staff, the pre-trainers, everyone, the vets and their reports, sit down and they're going to go say, This is Thursday in Sydney. Where are we at with Winx? What's going to go on? It hasn't been completely ruled out that option A might be motherhood. But more likely they'll plot a racing campaign. And Peter Tighe, when I said the Autumn Sun, he said, oh, bring it on.
Well, that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, we want Peter Tighe to be training Winx and the Autumn Sun. He said, no, we're not worried. We're the best in the world. We're still the best in the world. He's a nice colt. We want to take on the best. He's the second best. Bring him on. So it'd be lovely if that mentality translated to John Massara and to Chris Waller.
So John Massara's hands are in the air now, saying...
He's a hands in the air, man.
Nothing to do with me. It's all Chris Waller.
He's transferred the Bambi issue to Chris Waller. And but I'd love it if Peter Tighe's spirit of combat was infectious. And I'd love to see him. I'm sure Gator would as well. I'd love to see the two stars collide.
Well, speaking of stars, Gator has made it to the studio. He's lost a few articles of clothing on the way. Mm. He's semi-naked. But it is great to see you, Gator.
Good to see you. I was just working out the places I could have flown, the amount of time it took me to get here. I think I could have got to Brisbane.
Is this Aspie to
Maroochydore?
Aspie to Carlton?
Mm.
What was the issue? Because I came along the same route as you. There was road signs saying there will be a traffic issue later on, but not necessarily. Which route did you take?
Went to Beach Road. That's smart of myself.
What were you thinking? Beach Road in summer?
That's a valid point.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of those pesky bike riders that you might know that also block that. A
lot of respect.
Hey, now, Gator.
Yeah.
We're just talking, Matty Stewart, as he said, has just spoken to Chris Waller. John Massara.
No one can talk to Chris Waller
anymore. We can't get hold of Chris.
He's a closed shop.
To John Massara and also Peter Tighe.
Mm.
Do you want to see Winx race on? And do you want to see her take on the Autumn Sun?
Well, very clearly. I mean, we've spoken ad nauseum probably about, I think, what attracted me to the sport and to many others. And that's elite racing elite. So I think that clash in itself would attract, you know, a lot of peripheral viewers.
It'd do more than a $7.5 million restricted race.
But that's the point, isn't it? We've got these sort of kind of conjured up, manufactured things. We've done one in Melbourne, the All-Star Mile, and Sydney's been doing it left, right and centre. This is real old school, best against best, and that's what we want to see.
But you want to see her retire.
Oh, yeah, but if she's going to race on, I want to see her race the best. If she's not going to race on, she's not going to race on. I was more than happy to see her retire after the Cox Plate.
Yeah.
But if she's going to race on, take on the best.
That's the thing. I don't see a great advantage from a viewer perspective or even a turnover perspective of her to race on and everyone avoids her for another season. I mean, where's the appeal there?
And even in sport, Gator, look, I remember the legend of Muhammad Ali. It was late in career when he was, you know, even Rocky, the other Ali. And in sport...
You know that's not a true story.
And Zenyatta...
Don't break it.
The Herald Sun did a story after Rocky 3 when he fought Ivan Drago. They actually did a story, could Rocky actually win a boxing fight? But I don't reckon legendary sports people or horse, you know, champions lose anything in defeat. Zenyatta lost nothing for being... It actually sort of put a creative end to the story. Like, I don't think they should be scared of defeat with Winx at all.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you're 100% right, but I can see why they are. I mean, purely from, again, a viewer perspective, I want to see her challenged. It was the same with Black Caviar and the same with Maccabi Diva. I want to see them challenged. I don't really want to see them beaten, but I do want to see them challenged by the best. And by the way, just to break it to you, Maddie, breaking, the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist either.
Well, how do you explain the dollar coin on the thing?
Look, it's treacherous.
In the cup.
Yeah.
I think Maddie Falgate had a tricky issue with the Tooth Fairy recently, where he had to provide a $2 coin because he missed the original.
Tooth Fairy didn't come one night.
Awkward.
Yes.
Too many reds.
But Gator, I reckon the Autumn Sun to Winx is what Royal Ascot was to Black Caviar. Royal Ascot was the challenge that Nelly didn't work, and I think the Autumn Sun is the same challenge to Winx.
Yeah, I think he is a legitimate challenger because he's on the up, and even her great win in the Cox Plate. There's no doubt, purely on a mathematical basis, that she's not getting any better. Mm. She's, the peak's gone. She's sliding from immortality to just outstanding or almost unbeatable. So that's that. And then you've got Arcadia Queen and a few others emerging.
Well, and the George Ryder is the race that... there's only one possible collision, and that's the George Ryder.
But they
Ryder.
Have said that they wouldn't mind seeing the Autumn Sun. They think he'll be better at 2,000. So, I mean... They could end up in a Queen Elizabeth, but I think there is a chance, and it wouldn't be ideal for racing unless they did meet in the Queen Elizabeth, that for stud value, for breeding value, the Autumn Sun goes to the George Ryder. Maybe Winx comes down to the All-Star Mile if they don't want them to clash.
He's so robotic and military-like, Chris Waller, that he's not going to break tradition. He's not going to... Unless because it's the last campaign, he throws caution to the wind a bit. I don't know, because he doesn't have to prepare for the next one. But no, if the Autumn Sun takes on Winx, it's got to be in the Ryder at 1,500. There's no way in the world he'd beat her in a Queen Elizabeth. It'd have to be in a 1,500.
I think there's a scenario where she could get here, like a farewell tour, if you like. Like farewell to Flemington, then farewell to Randwick. That's probably the scenario. Mm.
Well, that might... be what's mapped out on Thursday. You know, I'm sure the VRC's been clawing away at them to get her to the All-Star Mile. So,
just one a quick one before we move on. The Autumn Sun, Massara said last week, most likely that will not race on after its three-year-old season because it's just too valuable. Mm. Now, what can racing do to try and keep these horses racing for longer?
Well, it's an age-old question, Michael, and I don't have an answer. There was a hypothetical answer I read, like a fairy tale story. Speaking of the Tooth Fairy, a fairy tale story where they had were able to effectively have the horse come back from duties, but it doesn't. It's not realistic.
It's like having a big Saturday night and then going to work on Monday, isn't it?
It takes me back.
Well, yeah. Others have had those big weekends. But no, well, this is... Well, Peter Volandis will say that his effort to keep four-year-olds from going to stud is to put on this big four-year-old race that he's created. His justification...
Yep.
Is it the Golden Eagle? Is that the seven? Is that the one? The four-year-old
one?
That's
the four-year-old one.
Yeah. Well, he'll say that I've whacked on $7 million to entice a colt.
Didn't help.
Well, that's because he miscalculated that the value of going to stud is far greater than a $7 million race for the Autumn Suns.
I mean, you've got to give it a chance still. I mean, it hasn't even had 1 year yet. I mean, we may be sitting here in 5 years' time saying, oh, well, two or three horses have hung around because of this race. So you can't really condemn it until you give it some time to lay out.
I'm a bit funny about that.
Have you listened to the verdict before?
Well, not... I'm usually on the bike.
Yeah. Oh, no, just common sense.
Hey, you're in the wrong studio, buddy. I'm not as big on the let's preserve the four-year-olds and keep them at the racetrack and away from stud. I think the... I know we have a dearth of high-class weight for age horses, and it sort of goes against what I'm saying, but there's also... it seems to replenish pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like every time a champion nicks off to stud or whatever, another one seems to pop up. Another high-class colt pops up, you know? Like,
well, it's all the hype and the boom. We don't get to see them over sustained seasons to work out if at the end of the day they really would have been a champion. Like Zoo Styles, the next big boom horse now. He's got the picket fence. Like, remember winning Rupert? He was off to stud before you knew.
But there's always another one. Like, I reckon there's probably 15 megastar, superstar colts about to go to stud in Australia. There's going to be another 15 next year.
Yeah.
You know, they all keep popping up.
That's true. I mean, there is an answer. It's called legislation. You know, they could make them, force them to not not retire until a certain age. I mean, then it opens up a whole different can of worms, and he's sore, he won't race. So
that did come up.
Yeah, I've heard a whisper.
But I don't know how you can. Well, it's tough. You know, everyone who says to me, "Oh, you can't cap Darren Weir," I don't know whether you can tell studs how to run their business.
I get that.
You know why? Because the first season at stud for the Autumn Sun, it might be 50. Yeah, if you legislate and say, "All right, you can't go until you're 4," life expectancy of a stallion's what, 19. What about the $50 million that you missed out on in your first year?
What's his stud?
If you stand at 200,000 first year and you serve 200 mares, that's $40 million, and that's one hemisphere.
200,000.
Well, that's not unprecedented. The top stallions stand for 200,000. Reduced choice and then Costa del Lago.
200 mares?
Yeah, that's what they serve. Okay. A top stallion, Reduced Choice at his peak stood for 250,000 and
first
served
season?
Two. Well, they're gonna queue up to go to him. Are you doubting my maths?
No, I think maths is one area we can't. It's the only area we can't.
No, he's a little bit rain managed.
Okay, so lower it to 100,000, 200 mares. That's 20 million.
20 million.
How do you compensate? And that's one hemisphere. Double it.
He's going to be a busy boy. No,
that's what they do.
No,
they just keep queuing up. They have a soy latte and they go back again.
And no race is going
to... Have a bunger?
To,
they go and have a bunger?
Oh, stop it. No race is going to... dearie me. Hey, let's talk about Flemington on Saturday because we had a couple of nice performances. We're in the off-season now. We're in the summer season. Do we have a couple of group horses put their hand up, Gator, on Saturday?
I think the last 8 days we've seen some real excitement. You know, Brooklyn Hustle from last week... Behemoth especially, and obviously even that Brooklyn Hustle form was well franked.
Yes, he looks like a horse of the future who will be not going to Magic. Well, they're trying to go to Magic Millions if he holds up, but he seems to be a two-year-old that could be a player in the major races.
Oh, look, it was a neat win. Didn't smash the clock, whereas, you know, Brooklyn Hustle section was off a good speed, were terrific, so, but concede this upside, you know, can they hold the horse together? Deeper into that race, you saw Nomino go to Sydney and run so well in the nursery on Saturday in the worst part of the track up there. So the format of the race already shaping really well. And then on Saturday, or yesterday, what day is it? 2 days ago, we saw Declares War, who has, and I mentioned it on Correct Weight yesterday, he's got a finish on him that's reserved for very good horses. The last 100 metres at Moonee Valley was out of the box. He was the only run on horse all night to win. Then Flemington looked in trouble. Then that surge late is reserved for good horses.
Remember Royal Symphony?
Yep.
It's a bit like he's get out of trouble ability. Yep. You know what it gets me? And we were talking about it on the radio the other day, is that this horse is the quintessential Darren Weir rapid improver, beaten at a far-flung bush track like Donald on debut somehow, beaten again at a better venue, and then bang, 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 and now... Who's to say we're not talking about him as a Group 1 winner in the autumn? You know, the other stables don't seem to be able to just go from zero to hero in four runs like the Weir horses do.
I wonder what the reason is there. I mean, obviously, weight of numbers is one. If you've got enough, it's attrition, isn't it? If you've got enough coming through, the chances are you're going to find a really good one.
But more, more about how they can go from a bush to Group 1 so quickly.
Emerge quickly. And
I don't know. Yeah. He keeps saying their system is that they don't test them out that much. He lets them race to find out where they are, and then it's natural improvement, the sand training that they do, the strength that they don't... Like, you hardly ever see a Weir horse running out of steam at the end of a race. Mm. They're always strong.
Yeah, the system has legs. I'd like to get to... like to get to my teeth into that.
It could get you a seniors triathlon if you got another Weir regime, I reckon. I reckon it would give you a much needed length.
Any help I can get.
But he's got that little engine inside the bike he saw.
Yeah, that's right. But I just, you know, even the trials, you talk to Darren about, you say if he's got a horse that, say, wins at Flemington on a Saturday, its first trial, it could go to St. Arnold and get beaten 10 lengths. And then it can go to Donald in a trial and get beaten 4 lengths. And then it can win its next trial at... wherever, Burren Beat. Mm. And then it's amazing how fitness gets them to their level rather than pushing them at trials. It's an amazing way his horses go through the system.
Yeah. I think it's a low base start. So, as Mick touched on, they sort of don't push it, let them find their feet, and then, you know, the good ones sort of find their own way.
So do you think he's a potential Group 1 horse?
Potentially, because he's probably going to even get better as he gets further. That's the thing. There's no real ceiling that I can see right now. And again, you know, going back and looking at his last two wins, you can watch a lot of races and not see that happen. So that tells me that it's elite talent.
If you're listening, he's a regular listener. He was at the Trots on Saturday night.
He was.
If you're listening, Weary, send us a text because I want to ask you specifically about Declare's War, about its rate of improvement in such a quick period of time and some insights into how it's actually happening.
Well, Gator,
unless
you
did it on Correct Way yesterday.
Yeah, and I actually put the question to him, you know, what does he need to do to take the next step? And, it wasn't really a question Darren could answer.
No, you know, I did hear that.
Yeah.
So I don't really know, Gator.
Yeah. No, it's good 360-degree honest feedback. That's just sort of what we want. But, but he did say stepping up in trip one and just natural, you know, ring craft and all that sort of stuff because he doesn't quicken as it stands and he might find another string to his bow there.
He might get a popular vote into the All-Star Mile out of nowhere.
You never know.
Just on Flemington, just to wrap up, because well done to Talia Hope, first win at Flemington. Yep. And Peter Chow, who I just had a chat, I think he gave you a little bit of a clip,
sure.
And maybe even Dino, because we were talking about he doesn't have the money to spend on these horses, and he's commending the programming of these 64s on a Saturday, which you're not a fan of, because it gives them a chance to win some decent prize money.
Oh, sure. I've got no knock on that aspect. The problem is the owners and the trainer there probably represent 0.000001 of the entire racing. You know, I'm talking bigger picture stuff. But
what was the betting? What was the betting on the race compared to the other races?
Oh, the turnover. I've got no idea. I'd have to find out from the tab.
Isn't that? That's going to answer the question of punter interest, isn't it? Is turnover compared to the other races?
Yeah, that's right. And look, I love the story. I want owners to make money. Make no mistake about that. But I was thinking bigger picture rather than a smaller one.
Do you find that you wouldn't bet in that race? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say I wouldn't bet in the race. But it's extremely difficult off a short, you know, 69 nominations, you know, for example, on a short deadline to get it right. So purely from that perspective, it's challenging if I was going to play heavily.
But it depends on your definition of the bigger picture, doesn't it? The bigger picture may actually be is racing big enough to absorb races that you wouldn't normally have on an elite Saturday program, but whether the benefit to the owner and the smaller trainer, when no one can win against Weir anyway, maybe it gives them an opportunity.
Well, 69 entries says that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in it.
Maybe given we race so often every day of the week, we can accept a few aberrations in the form guide and it's not a big deal, you know?
Yeah, look, it's not a crusade of mine or anything.
No,
I don't have a major issue with it, but I think the, you know, elite racing, you know, as elite as we can get off-season probably should, in my humble opinion, should be a factor.
And I remember looking at the race, you know, when you first look at the form guide, you look at it and you go, jeez.
And you knew there'd be a half length over the first.
Oh, but sometimes they're... My mates, for instance, never stop betting on those races. They'll see something because they don't do much. They'll see it win on a Friday when they're at the bar at the Royal Oak and, you know, and then they'll back it on the Saturday. So they're, you know... But I remember looking at it in Best Bets going, oh, jeez, this is the hardest race I've ever seen.
Anything else out of Flemo before we talk interstate?
We've touched on
the Meg Ryan horse.
We've touched on nice one. Yes. I think Mascolino's progressing the right way. He'd be better suited even further. And once he holds his form, history says he keeps it. So he's certainly one to follow out of the race. And great to see Whispering Book back winning, giving weight to some pretty smart males. First up. Looked a bit big, still too good for them. So she's been Group 1 competitive. So here we are off-season, inverted commas. We've got Group 1 competitive horses.
And the Dazzler was... he was very glass-half-empty-ish about her and basically said she'd have to... You know, he didn't like her. He liked old mate Top Weight.
Thermal Current.
Flash Home, Thermal. And he was right about Native Soldier, but he did say it would require the perfect run to win with Springbrook, and it got the perfect one. And so he was sort of half right, Darren. But if there'd been stable confidence with her record, she'd have gone around half the price, you know, with a positive push rather than a negative feeling about her.
Yeah, that's a fair call. A lot of his horses, Darren Weir's stable horses, drift in the betting first up and significantly. So, and the stats are there. They don't lie that the strike rate's much better third, fourth up.
And as much as Native Soldier was okay, he's better around a corner. He's going to appreciate the corner of the Gold Coast, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he did. He is, probably. But he did exactly the same thing first up last prep. He had a good run. He loomed like he was going to win, ran out of puff late, then was brilliant second up. So, you know, horses follow their own profile. This is what happens a lot. So he looks clearly a betting proposition, depending on the race, his next run.
But he's never been able to replicate the Caulfield runs anywhere else, has he?
No, he certainly dominated at Caulfield when he's been there, those couple of runs. Hey, just quickly, we mentioned Zusol before. If you owned Zusol, it's probably a little bit different because of the financial bank balances of those who sit in this studio. $500,000 on offer. He's 5 from 5. Nothing can get near him up in Queensland. If the owners decided to go to the Vaux Road Plate on December 29 and he wins that, $500,000 jumps in. Or do you put him away and look for bigger riches further down the track?
Look, you could probably do both. I mean, the reality is, if you've got a good horse, there's always a good race, you know. And he looks an exceptional horse. He ran the time again there on Saturday, smashed the clock. So, looks genuinely exciting. To answer your question, I mean, a bird in the hand and all that.
I was about to say that. I was about to say the old saying, a bird in the hand's worth two in the bush, and the bird in the hand's the 500 grand around the corner.
Yeah.
Take it.
Take it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the horse will come first. I mean, he's a brilliant trainer. He'll know what he's doing.
He says, Tony Gollan, it's the best horse he's trained. From your facts and figures, is he, we saw Zoo Style trifecta the Coolmore. Is he up to the quality of a Sunlight, a Zoo Sane? I'm getting confused with all these Zoo Star horses. From the performances you've seen?
Look, I haven't done the numbers on all of Tony's horses, but what I do know is that on Saturday, he ran 1823, he was home 33.6. He was 0.3 and change off Takeover Target's track record. So, I know, for a young horse, I know it was a quick day, but that's exceptional.
Yeah. And the thing about Tony Gollan's best horses, they've never really... he's had a lot of really good horses
and won
a lot of good... But they haven't stood up interstate very often, have they? Every spring he'll bring a nice one down and run up the straight in one of those feature races, and quite often they get rolled. So if Tony Gollan says this is his best horse, he's had a lot of dominant Queensland horses, but not many that have been stars on the very big stage. So this might be that horse.
SMS saying Outback Barbie should have beaten Zoo Style. It was an unbelievable run. That's from Michael in Brisbane. Well, I think you want to follow her heading to the Magic Millions.
Well, she was very good. I mean, she got very close to him on the line, and there was a gap to the rest of them, quick time. So, clear black booker. I couldn't subscribe to the theory she should have won, but she certainly ran very well.
A couple of SMSs coming through here, Maddie, on your stallion knowledge. Morning, gentlemen. Redoute stood at his peak for 330,000, as did Encosta, but it took him 10 years to get to that mark. First year, 50, 80K, then they build on that. That's from Tony. I reckon he might start a bit more than 50 to 80K.
He'll start at 100.
Tax them. That's the best way to keep horses on the track if they want to go to start early, and then you can put that tax money into more prize money.
That's been spoken about too.
Mm, I've heard that one.
All right, more to come. We're going to take a break. On the other side of this, we're going to be joined by a special guest, Gareth Hall, because we want to talk about the Inter-Dominion. And also, Gareth is based over in Perth. I want to get his thoughts on Perth racing as well. All that still to come on The Verdict.
Tiger Tara led 8 metres. Spankham's trying to pick up from San Carlo. Then Cruz Bromac round the outside is our Uncle Sam. But it's Tiger Tara out by 10. Off the back straight in 26.2. Tiger Tara led 10 metres to Spankham. Then Cruz Bromac, our Uncle Sam down the outside. But it's Tiger Tara who's well out in front with Todd McCarthy. It's Tiger Tara who takes the tab in a Dominion 2018 and in style. Tiger Tara first.
Oh, it was a one-act affair in the Inter-Dominion on a Saturday night at Tabcorp Park. Melton Tiger Tara, the bona fide Group 1 horse of the race. Why didn't we back it? Spread eagle them. Todd McCarthy and for trainer Kevin Pizzuto, it was a big night indeed. Gareth Hall, front and centre on Sky's coverage as he is each and every weekend. And he's also one of the voices of the West. Morning radio over there, Tab Radio. And it is great to see the old Victorian back in town. And great to have him on RSN 927. How are you, Gareth?
G'day, Michael, Maddie and Gary. Yes. Yeah, great to be here.
What a night on Saturday night. Now, you've been front and centre out there. We've been following the build-up to ID18 here on RSN 927 for the past few weeks, and it was a great crescendo. The weather certainly played its part. What do you make of the night and the race?
It was a great build-up to the Inter-Dominion. I was watching over there in Perth, and when I arrived there on course at Melton, I've been there a few times, but never have I have to line up to get a car park. I think I was in the car park line for about 10 to 15 minutes. And then when I walked in there, the buzz was something else. So, and that was before the first race. So I think it was a big tick there for Harness Racing Victoria with the way that they promoted this great race. And it is the greatest race in harness racing. It got lost there for a little while until Perth picked it up and had 3 years there of the Inter-Dominion back to the old format. And then it went to Victoria this year, of course. So it was a big tick for mine. And the performance of Tiger Tara was something else. His track record from where this horse has come from. He was purchased by Kevin Basuto a few years ago. And there's a story behind that, but I don't think I'm allowed to mention that on air. But Kevin Basuto is one of the great...
Hang on, you've got us intrigued now.
Yeah, well, he purchased the horse and he had to probably go to extreme lengths to get that money, maybe a loan or something.
Right.
To get Tiger Tara.
From a standard lending agency?
Yes.
Or perhaps
from the bank. I don't know if he said...
Slightly different arrangement.
Yeah. He might have lied to the bank manager saying he needed a house or something, and then Tiger Tara came along.
He's a beautiful black horse, isn't he? That was what stuck out to me. He's a lovely... Even in that weird little mounting area, because they've got the carts, and they all just crash into it. The tiny little parade area where they just crash into each other and all that. But a beautiful looker.
Yes, but... Yeah. Three months ago, before the start of his preparation this time in, Kevin Basuto trains in New South Wales just outside of Sydney, and he's got a property there where he jogs his horses. But to fast work them, he has to go to the local track at Bankstown. And then one day he was taking four horses to the Bankstown track and he had a car accident. And it was a serious car accident as well. His car got T-boned. He was injured in hospital. His assistant trainer, Karen Crouch, was badly injured and went to hospital and spent a week there. But he had four horses in the back and they all went down, including Tiger Tara. And the story goes that Kevin dragged himself out of the car. All the horses were on their backs. The three got up, but Tiger Tara didn't. He thought Tiger Tara at that stage had broken his back. And he was emotional, Kevy, when he told me this story. And, of course, Tiger Tara is his best mate, the horse that he loves. And he had to drag him up. And Kevin was injured at the time as well. And then he got him up in the end. And he said it was the biggest relief that he's ever had, because this is the horse that had taken him to places that he only dreamt of. Mm. And he thought he had lost him at that stage. And then to get him back racing after the mental scars that horse would have had after being in the float and with that serious car accident and being decked on the ground at that stage, is quite remarkable from where they had come from that particular day to winning an Inter-Dominion.
That reminds me of the story of, I think the dog's name was Electra Ottens. There's a very well-known greyhound kennel that was driving across from Adelaide after heats of the Adelaide Cup, had a stack. A few of the dogs died. One escaped. I think it was Electra escaped the carnage. They couldn't find him, and he was spotted in the streets of Dimboola and random sightings of this greyhound. And then the trainer eventually went to Dimboola and found the greyhound waiting for him sitting under a tree in a paddock. There you go. That was about 5 or 6 years ago. It was an amazing story.
Yeah. Amazing. Now, we've been watching what you do on Sky, and we're out there watching again on Saturday night. One aspect that I think the racing industry, when I say racing, I mean thoroughbreds, needs to take from the harness racing is what you personally do, Jason Bonington do, and that is the pre-race interviews that you do where you go from sulky to sulky, driver to driver. It's outstanding. It's one of the best pre-race insights you can get. And Gator, we know that Dean Pettit and the boys, they do the same on racing.com, but we need more of that, I think, from a viewer wanting to see the jockeys behind the barriers. I don't see why we can't get three different jockey interviews while they're behind the barriers.
No, and it's something that Channel 7 have expanded on in the last couple of years. And look, I think it's gold as well, purely from a punting perspective. You know, there was a time when it first came in, this rule about declaring your hand, you know, you've got a change of tactics. And I'd first frowned upon that, because why would you go into any game and give away your game plan? Yeah. You know, but I understand drastic changes of tactics, you know, should be made public now. And that insight from riders and trainers pre-game, pre-race, is gold.
And I reckon the harness community are more forthcoming about it because they all realise that every sport's marginalised now. No sport is guaranteed space and popularity and all that sort of stuff. And harness racing's in that zone as well, but harness racing more so. And I reckon the harness racing people realise that they're all in it together, and if they want to get their hold onto their slice of market share and garner popularity and increase and all that sort of stuff, that they have to extend themselves to do all those sort of marketing things. And what the jockeys haven't quite grasped it to the same degree. Horse racing's a little bit more arrogant in thinking that there's certain things we do and don't need to do. And I reckon the jockeys have to understand that harness racing and the gallops are not so different that we don't have to do everything we possibly can to increase the fan base and all that as well.
When we first started, I remember it was at Malta because there was just a stationary camera there when I came down from Sydney to do a big meeting. And I thought, well, you have to drag the drivers or trainers out to this stationary camera. And when you're on Sky Racing 1, it's that busy and they're not really going to get onto camera anyway, maybe for 2 or 3 seconds. I said, what's the point? So we got the roving camera, might have cost it a little bit, but I think turnover went up 30 to 40%
really
after we did that, because it's... When you're sitting at home and you're looking for a tip, you want to hear it from the drivers, like Gary Hall Jr. is tipping this horse, or one of the trainers is tipping this horse. And in harness racing, speed maps are everything. Mm. So if you have a driver like Chris Elford and you interview him on Gammalite, Chris, what do you think with Gammalite? Do you think you'll lead here? Yes, Gareth, I think I can cross and win. And then all of a sudden the punters see it clearer in their mind now and they bet. And I think it's another aspect why it works. And I think it's a little bit different to the thoroughbreds because it's easier to access the microphone and go around there with a standard bred than a thoroughbred. But it's an entertainment business now. So you need to make sure that you are providing the punters and the viewers something a little bit different that captures their attention, like a camera in their face before they move up behind 100%. The green light. And the drivers enjoy it now because some of them do anyway, but they know the importance of what it is for their livelihood. If you're not increasing turnover, then you might not have a sport. So you need to make sure, and I think participants need to, I think they understand that they have the responsibility as well to promote the game so they continue to be relevant in this entertainment game of sport these days.
And Gaylor, it's about enjoying your time in the sun as well, because harness racing to me, because I grew up in the harness racing community, and a lot of it is anonymous toil, endless laps of training, driving to Bort for a few drives and driving back. You spend most of your time on the road and no one goes to a lot of these meetings. So I think the harness people appreciate their time in the sun more than the gallops people probably, because it's a rarer thing in the trots.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And certainly Gaz's points is key, I think, that information to punters, giving them information, is certainly from what they perceive as an insider. You know, someone who's sitting in the seat, or a jockey sitting in the saddle, there's no better inside information than that. So give them all the information, let them filter what they want, but add the entertainment component, which is obviously key as well, and then you've got a product.
And it's not just racing. All sports are embracing this more and more now. You have a look at Seven's coverage of the cricket. You're speaking to the coaches. You're speaking to players during play. And the same happens in the football. Racing needs to do even more. And there's great access to the trainers, great access to the jockeys. There needs to be more access.
And what it does as well is that I got the idea, say, from the V8s, when they go inside the pit crew, etc., when they've had a major crash, they've got the microphone as the drivers get out of the car. Yeah. And it's like reality TV. And I think if you can do a broadcast that is exciting for the viewers out there, it promotes the industry players as well. It creates heroes. So we get to know the jockeys, the horses and the trainers. So people watching it then can say, well, I know what Damien Oliver looks like, or Michael Walker, etc. And then hopefully you develop heroes from that.
Gareth gets so lazy, he actually jumps on the sulky with them.
I noticed that. He hitches a lift.
He's sitting in there with
these
them.
These new sulkies don't work anymore, and I've broken a few.
One little niggle I had on Saturday night was, I think that the crowd should have been connected to the action a little bit more, and choreographed a bit better. Yeah. I there was the music and all that sort of stuff happening in the the amenities area and all that sort of stuff, and the horses would be trotting around. I think the course broadcast should have connected, maybe connected the crowd more to the action than happened. It was only a minor niggle, but did you sort of think there was a little bit of a gap there?
The only issue there was the on-course audio was that we should have been able to listen to what Jason Bonington's pre-race interviews and what you guys, yep, the experts, were saying on Sky or even 7.2's.
It was disconnected, wasn't it?
Because we couldn't quite hear that. It was more we had a DJ over there, or we had some bloke... screaming out blister in the sun when we wanted to actually hear what was going on.
How was the DJ?
Track. Average.
Yeah. I haven't got the budget yet, HRV. They get a big,
see,
big
I grew
name,
up
yeah.
on Violent Femmes.
Tiger Lily or
blister
someone.
In the sun. Felgate was all confused about it. And I was sort of, oh, actually, I'm now into this plug.
Just quickly, because we're going to take a break, and then, Hawley, yep, I want to talk to you about racing in WA as well, because I know you're great mates with Bob Peters. We don't get to know him too well over here, and Willie Pike, and I want to get the inside.
Don't know about great mates. We have a cup of tea from time to time.
The female domination in the sport. Yeah. I think they won five of the first six, and Kate Gath won the Trotters Tornado Valley.
Yep.
Huge performance as well.
And that means you can answer the great unanswered question too about female drivers.
Well, Maddie's got a theory, which physics, I suppose. Surely the lighter females, they should be dominating.
I think they run for them. I think they've got that ability with their hands, etc., to let the horses, or give the horses confidence to run, and obviously they're lighter as well. But basically, since Karen Manning came onto the scene and broke all kinds of records when she was driving for her father, Peter Manning, up there in Great Western, Night Pistol, and she won on the international stage. Since then, the women have been a dominant force in the sport, like the Jodie Quinlans, the Kate Gass, now Lauren Tritton over there in New South Wales, Kerri-Anne Turner, Kima Frenning's really come onto the scene.
Well,
there
I want to ask Gator, because Gator would be more into, because he's an athlete, into the physics, the science of the athlete. And I'm going to ask Gator to ponder this in the ad break of, if you're a 50-kilogram driver driving against 85-kilogram drivers, it's the old wheelbarrow full of bricks in it. You can't tell me it doesn't make a difference. And harness racing's never explored it to the point where they've got an answer.
Well, now or after the
it's still doing now.
It's just power to weight ratio. It's very, very simple. If you put the same engine on a motorbike and you put the same engine in a car, the motorbike's going to go faster for longer. It is that simple.
Mm. But you've also got tactics and the ability.
No, but it challenges the fundamental basics of harness racing. If it does make a difference, they have to do something about it. Yep.
There's a lot of drivers that are lighter as well. There's Chris Elford. I don't know how much he would weigh, but he wouldn't be too much heavier than the girls. And
Bulldog
Gary Hall
Nicholson
Jr.
versus
there.
Karen Manning, there'd be 30 kilos
but
behind them.
But they've got sulkies these days that are different than, say, they were 20
years
ago.
Yeah, no, but they might be different than they were, but there's still the 30-kilo difference between the drivers.
Anyway, it was a great night, great series. We'll discuss it more later in the week when we do a harness segment on Racing Pulse, but it was a good, fun night. I hadn't been out to a big night at Melton before, and... it's a fair way out, but it was a good fun evening.
It's a long way back when you've done your dosh.
We were comforted by the Chardonnay.
It was a long taxi ride home. We're going to take a break. On the other side of this, we're going to have a chat to Gareth Hall, our special in-studio guest, with Gator and also Matty Stewart about WA racing and the stars that may come east.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Keep your SMSs coming in, 0416 90 50 52. Gareth Hall, David Gately, Matty Stewart in the studio. Hawley, before I ask you about WA racing and your stars over there, during the week, gents, a bit of controversy, Racing New South Wales going off on their own again with a local law that says jockey managers are not able to bet in that state. What's your thoughts, Gator?
Well, I don't have an issue with it. It's all about perception, isn't it? And obviously the recent example in Sydney, even though it looked totally harmless to an insider, and I'm sure it was, I have no doubt it was, but still, if we're trying to attract people and the what the sport looks like is king, then it's treacherous waters, isn't it? I don't have an issue with the rule.
Do you think it'll be maybe instituted here in Victoria?
I think perception is everything. Yep. If you're perceived to wear too many hats and they collide perception-wise, you've got to... Yeah, I agree with Gator.
But you're allowed to ask the stewards. if you want to have a bet, you can say, well, can I have a bet in this race? And the stewards have got to give you permission.
To clear your hand.
Yeah.
I think...
Do they tell the
It's a strange one. I think that rule is more for your Mark Guest, who works on Sky, to get permission to continue working on there as a tipster. Oh, they are filthy. They are absolutely filthy, and they're looking at legal action. Now, to play devil's advocate, what's the difference between a
trainer,
form analyst who's not licensed but does the form, does the track mapping and tells the jockeys, tells the trainers what they believe the maps will be, where you should be and so forth. They bet in every race. Arguably, they have more information than what a jockey manager does.
Yeah, but it's again perception. Like, they are not literally the manager of the jockey getting an income from the jockey. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things that push the boundaries. Some push through. And as much as, you know, I feel for Guessy and these guys, it pushes through. It's a relationship that pushes through.
Do you think it will come a time where the trainers aren't allowed to bet?
No, because, again, sometimes things are a practicality thing as well. I mean...
So what's the difference between a jockey's manager and a trainer, where the trainer tells the jockey how he wants the horse to be ridden?
Because they have a fundamental relationship. Jockey-trainer-horse relationships are...
How would you feel if your trainer was backing another horse?
No issue whatsoever.
No?
No. No, it's a different beast. I see the question, but it's a different beast. I mean, one is clearly could be seen as perception, insider trading, whereas the other one, you're backing what you know in your own horse.
The trainer is specifically training the horse, and a little byproduct is he can bet because he's a citizen. The jockey manager is a very specific relationship with the jockey and a very specific punting website thing as well. I mean, they're just different.
Do you know journalists who are accredited to work on the tennis aren't allowed to bet? Can't bet 2 hours before a football match if you're an accredited AFL journalist.
A few of their wives and girlfriends.
Yeah. Jackie's cheering for this to be brought into racing. what do you think about that?
I've seen you bet, Jackie. Yes. You get that one over the line.
Hey, Hawley, you're a king of the West.
We've don't know about that.
Enjoying the racing over in WA, dominated once again by Bob Peters, his horses, and the wizard of the West, William Pike. What's Bob Peters like?
He's an interesting man. I thoroughly enjoy sitting down with Bob and having a chat to him because he's a remarkable man with the way that he's been able to build an empire through his thoroughbred empire with all the horses and the broodmare lines that he's created over the years. He's been going for more than five decades with a passion for thoroughbred racing. But he was a man before that. He started from basically nothing. He got into the car business and he was retired at 30. So he's a very smart man and he knows what he wants and he knows how to get what he wants. And obviously he's had so much success over the years with his horses, but I think right now he's got the best team of horses that he's ever had and his breeding continues to get better. Obviously he breeds a lot, or he breeds all of his horses to stallions over in the east and a few in New Zealand as well. So, yeah, and he's got a couple of stars at the moment.
Do you think we'll see Arcadia Crane here in the spring?
I think so. The regumate issue is an issue. There's no doubt about that, whether she can use that in New South Wales or Victoria. But there's no doubt that Bob wants to win a WS Cox Plate. That's the race that he wants and he's always wanted. And he's got a filly, Arcadia Crane, that I think can do that.
William Pike's an interesting one because he's just so far and away the dominant jockey over there. He's got the best cattle, but the school of thought, if he came here to the eastern states, how would he go?
He'd be pretty good. He wouldn't be as dominant, of course, as he is over there. But he's a country boy at heart. He had some success over in Hong Kong. Why would he need to leave? Because obviously he's Bob's number one rider. He knocks back rides on Saturday and Wednesday and Thursday. So... He would be making more money than, say, most of your jockeys in the top five, you would imagine, with all the success that he gets over there in WA. And the prize money's pretty good outside of Sydney and Melbourne. I think some races you get $70,000 to the winner if they're West Speed, etc. So the prize money's pretty good in WA.
Gator, it's like Jamie Carr. Sometimes you're too successful to leave, aren't you? You've got so many endless commitments. The next week is always booked in advance from the previous week. There's not a break in the cycle sometimes.
Yeah, and... That's it. The thing is, if you're good at your job, you're good at your job. I mean, the obviously put the white shorts on and playing away from home, you're not probably as familiar with the Caulfield angles as an Ascot. So there'd be factors there, but that'd be minor.
What about, sorry, when Greg Ryan came to town, and he was winning everything in New South Wales, and then he based himself in town, and suddenly, I'm not saying this would be the case with Willie Pipe, suddenly it was a lot harder.
Yeah, sure. You
know?
Yeah.
What about the horses, Gator? How good are the horses in the West? We know in history, days gone by, we've had the superstars, the Northerlies. How good are is the current calibre?
No, exceptional. I think Arcadia Queen's win in Kingston Town was, I'm on record, so I think it was probably in the top three or four of the year runs. Just to run that sort of time off that sort of fearsome speed and still be able to produce that closing speed is the sign of a great athlete. Mm. If you're running faster for longer, it is tough to do, and that's what the elites do at any sport, whether it's a 5K runner or a marathon runner. They run faster for longer, and she's been able to do that and still has room to move and plenty of upside. I'm a big Enticing Star fan. I can't believe a horse ran past her. It's the first time I've seen her life.
I couldn't believe it. I think there's no chance a horse will run past her. And we're all on at the $14, the $15 when these markets open, because we were seeing the Dart, and we hadn't seen a horse produce those kind of times for a long time. Yeah. And then obviously she had that issue being in season, and she wasn't at her best. And Adam Durant will say that too, that she wasn't at her best in the Winterbottom Stakes. And he would have learned a lot from that particular campaign with her. So she'll have a break. And I think if Bob can get her there, maybe the Everest or a race like that, she'll be heading over there to the East. But then the other big question with all of this is, does he allow Grant Williams and Adam Durant to travel with these horses, or does he stick to his business plan? And when I asked him on radio a couple of weeks ago, just after the victory there of Arcadia Queen, he goes, "No, Gareth, that's not what we do with our business. They stay home, our trainers, and the horses go to different trainers."
Don't tell me Darren Weir's going to get Galaxy Star and Arcadia Queen.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think, so he's got some decisions to make. Yeah, I don't know what trainers they would go to over here.
Galaxy Star win the Perth Cup?
If she goes that way, she definitely goes to the Ted Vermhees on Saturday, this weight for age 2100 metres race. But if she does go to the Perth Cup, she'll be winning. I still
2400 like 2400 these days?
Yeah, 2400. But he did give her a start over the 2000 metres at the end of her last preparation. She did it pretty easily.
Was she by Blackfriars or something?
She's a Reduce choice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm with Action. If he gets to the Perth Cup, I've given him so many chances, and I think Action can win the Perth Cup $9. If he gets there,
Hey, Felgate, I've got just a tweet from Lilydale Steve, and I reckon he addresses the previous subject perfectly. The difference is a jockey manager has the inside word and tactics on a number of runners in the same race from different camps, potentially, for each of his jockeys, while a trainer only has the inside knowledge on his own team. I think I struggled to find the right answer, but old mate Lilydale's come up with it.
All right. It's one that will be debated more and more. We're out of time, guys, but just quickly, Regimate, you touched on Kieran Maher, interesting on the weekend.
Yeah.
We saw the return to form of Aloysia. Yep. He's now saying, well, she's only going to race for New South Wales.
Well, it's black and white, isn't it? I mean, they went into that race saying, well, if she returns to her form, that's probably the reason. In racing, often it's not one answer. There's a number of factors that bring an answer. But that looks a high percentage reason why she's returned to great form.
Well, if the problem is the ingredients have changed, get to the bottom of it and go back to what we were getting, and then we don't have an issue. But
well,
that's
out of racing's control, though.
That's right.
But that answer will eventually come, you'd think.
Yeah, they have to measure the impact. So, for example, caffeine in endurance athletes, we know, because it's scientifically proven, that 3 to 11% improvement in an athlete, we have to know what the percentage improvement, if any, is, and then legislate
but
on
But can't
it.
They just make the product that was made, say, a few years ago before they added a new product and then say, this is not performance enhancing, but it does the job still, and this is the only product.
The
can,
maybe they've only done the testing on it now that the product was the entire
A lot of time. Testing to do then.
Unless the steroid has always been in it and the modern testing is now just picking it up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to drag on and on and on because there is more testing
Nothing
to be done.
Quick.
Especially if Racing Australia is making a decision.
Well, Racing, when we spoke
How are they
to,
going, Matty?
I think Barry O's on a yacht somewhere.
We'll discuss this more during the week. Hey, Hawley, great
thanks,
to see
you.
You're in town for a couple
Michael.
Of weeks, aren't you? A
couple of weeks, yeah.
Well, we might get you back in to earn some... we won't pay you, but to do something. great to see you, mate. Gator, great to see you in here too as well. Leave us with a winner.
Winner?
Any time. Just a horse to follow.
I haven't done any form for it.
Just say race 7, number 3.
Stick with... Stick with Casino 14 yesterday. That was the better the...
SMS coming through here saying, thank you, Gator. Better the century, better the month. $2.80 into $1.90 and got the cash yesterday.
Gold, right?
Well, dance with me will be winning at Pinjarra Trotsay.
My spy up at Malden tells me, in all likelihood, the Peters Stars go to Weir.
Not surprising.
I don't know about that.
Not surprising. Hey, it's been good fun. The verdict, if you're having a bet in Pinjarra today, good luck. Mm-hmm. We'll be back tomorrow from 8:30.